Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
Wow, that is the sound of Rock Splitting Politics. And once again, you know what it means. When you come here and listen to this show, you're listening to us on webtalkradio.net. And I'm your host, Ed Holliday. And you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We've got a show that's wrapped up that should be a blunt instrument to the cliffs of no change everywhere. We're talking today with Mark Skoda. He's our special guest. He's a talk show host, a Tea Party leader. He's been on CNN, Fox, national shows all over the place. Lives in Mississippi now, once lived in Memphis, Tennessee. But he's going to bring us up to speed on what's going on with the conservatives and helps give us some direction, just like we know in the past. Everywhere that freedom was fought and won for, people had to think through, and how do we get our freedom, and how do we get our freedoms back? And Mark Skoda is one of the smartest people I've ever met. He's got a track record of making jobs, knows how to get things done in America and other countries, and we'll talk to him. He'll tell you a little bit about his background. Amazing, amazing American. We're proud to have him on the show. And not only that, we're going to talk to you, Rush Limbaugh. You know, he's got the number one radio show in America, 20 million people a week. But guess what? I listened to him a little bit last week, and he has caught on to something on the Benghazi scandal. There's a question that Doc Holliday asked right here on this show back on May 20th, 2013. And I play a clip from my show, and I play a clip of what Rush is talking about. So you got something to look forward to there. And speaking of Rush, last week, Rush was talking about how President Obama, he's involved the presidency with mediocrity. It's really what he's done when he didn't say anything to America, didn't come out with any statements and talk about the Benghazi, but all the terrorists that were planning on something that all the chatter we heard about, and they shut down over 21 embassies and State Department buildings in Muslim countries because of that. But he didn't say a thing about it till he got on a comedy show with Jay Leno. So Rush spoke about that, and that's going to lead us right into this week's Tombstone of the Week Award. We'll give that to President Obama for going on Jay Leno, and I'll tell you some of the mistakes he made right there on Jay Leno's show. So that's going to be up coming on the Tombstone of the Week Award at the end of the show. But first, let me tell you, don't go away, because we got all that to talk about and get to Mark Skoda with a great interview. But before we get there, let me first tell you about the precarious position of the Republican Party. They are in a precarious position. And in fact, Molly Hatchet has something to say. And after Molly Hatchet says their song about where I feel the Republican Party is, then I'll tell you exactly why. And that was Molly Hatchet singing Flirting with Disaster. And that's where the Republicans find themselves exactly right now. And the reason why is they just come off a presidential election that, by all means, statistically looking at it, they should have won. And they didn't get enough conservatives out to support a candidate, and they got beat. Barack Obama got fewer votes than he did the time before in his first election. But the Republicans could not get enough voters out. So they were set back in the presidential elections, and now they find themselves once again looking at a debt limit deal coming up where Congress will have to approve a debt limit or the government can't pay its bills. And we told you on this show a few weeks ago, it's the tally of the national debt. It's been stuck at $16 trillion. It won't go to $17 trillion. It's been stuck because the United States Treasury Department says it's not going up. They're switching things around. But to get to the point is, now we got Tea Party conservatives and very conservatives in the Republican Party saying, let's defund Obamacare and we'll shut the government down to make sure it happens. And, of course, they say, well, we'll fund everything but Obamacare. But the president, they'll play a chess game, and it puts it right in the president's position to say, no, you know, he'll make the whole government shut down. So the problem with that approach is that we do. Hey, I believe that. I would love to shut down Obamacare, and I'd love to see them flex their muscle. The problem with that is in America today, most Americans still get their news by mainstream media. We've said it before. The mainstream media is a cheerleader for the far left. Republicans will get blamed if the government is shut down. And the problem with that is it's going to play right in the playbook for the Democrats in 2014. Not only can Republicans lose the possibility of getting the Senate, they could lose Speaker Boehner's position as Speaker of the House because they could lose enough House seats. And you say, well, no, really not. They couldn't do that. Look what they did in 2010. But what I say is look what Obama did in 2012. Mitt Romney went into the election day thinking he was going to be the next president of the United States. And they didn't think Obama would get his people out. But Obama did. And they did it with computers. We talked about it on this show. We don't have time to get into that. But the Republicans, if they get a big setback in 2014, it may splinter the party. Very conservatives and the moderates, and then you got your moderate liberals, the rhinos, and if that party is splintered, then, well, lo and behold, the Democrats will be in power for a long time, and we will probably see a third party arise. The Republicans may never regain consciousness if they get a huge setback in 2014. So they are in a precarious position looking at this debt limit, knowing that the far left is the mainstream media is controlled by the far left, and it's the cheerleader. And they have Barack Obama right there that should be challenged. So where do I stand? Oh, I stand on right now the most important thing that this country can do is move further to the right. Now, how do we get there? Does it mean that we have to shut down the government? Well, we got sequester in. I think I've been a fan of sequester because the fact that we have to live without as much money as thought we'd need. But when you start shutting down the entire government, and the conservatives don't want to do that. I understand that. But the thing is, they don't have the power. They got one half of one third of Congress, United States House of Representatives. And they need to flex some muscle, but they got to show some wisdom and discernment. So exactly what should they do? Well, I tell you, at this point right now, the Republicans have got to be in position to gain seats in 2014. I'll talk more about that in the future weeks. We got to move on to the show because I told you about Rush Limbaugh and what one of the things he said just last week. Listen to him right here.
There is a somewhat shocking report that I came across today at a website run by Doug Ross. It's called the Conservative Report. And Doug Ross maintains here that Valerie Jarrett gave the orders to stand down in Benghazi. To all that Valerie Jarrett, who constitutionally is not in the chain of command and cannot do that. And that's why this, if true, is a bombshell.
Thank you, Rush, for picking up on what I brought out on May 20th, 2013 on the show. You go back and listen to the show when I explained the difference between an Obamacrat and an Obama rat. Here's what I had to say. They didn't have to be given orders from the White House or the re-election campaign. Look, an Obama rat is somebody who will put the health of the re-election team of President Obama over the health of the country. Benghazi, do I have to say anything else? How many Americans died? 4 Americans died. Ask a couple of weeks ago. Did they die for the country, or did they die so that President Barack Obama could be reelected? I'm not talking about their bravery. Their bravery was true American heroes. I'm saying the people who allowed them to die, were those decisions for politics, for political purposes, or was it for what's best for the country? Those are the decisions. Obama rats make decisions that are good for the re-election of Barack Obama. Hey, by the way, on Benghazi, where was Ann Jarrett the night of Benghazi? Who gave the stand-down orders? Did Ann Jarrett know anything about this? I would like to know. Wouldn't you? Did Ann Jarrett know anything on national security? Did she make any political decisions? Did President Barack Obama talk to Ann Jarrett the night of Benghazi? I would like to know. And that was my comments from the show about 8 weeks earlier. So I'm glad that Rush has caught up with Doc Holliday. And I'm glad he's mentioning his on his show, because I want to know, what did Valerie Jarrett know? What did Valerie Jarrett know on the night of Benghazi? What did she do? So those are questions that somebody ought to ask that's on a committee in Congress. So call them. Tell them. That's what Doc Holliday and Rush Limbaugh together want to know. And yes, I did notice that. I got my rant back in May 20th, and I said Ann Jarrett instead of Valerie Jarrett, and I apologize for that. But that was just for it hit me when I was saying that, because I really want to know what Valerie Jarrett was doing, and somehow Ann came out, and so I apologize for that. But that's what we all want to know, and Rush wants to know now also. What was Valerie Jarrett doing, and what orders did she give while she was in the White House the night of the Benghazi attack? Now, we got to get on our show with our interview with Mark Skoda. You want to listen to him. First, before we go to Mark, let me just remind you, you're listening to us on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. I invite you to go back and listen to our archive shows. Go back and listen to our shows the last 2 or 3 weeks. We've had some fabulous shows, some good information that you won't get anywhere else. Hey, and that includes our exclusive inside the White House knowledge that we know President Obama likes catfish. And if you hadn't heard that show, go back and listen to last week's show and discover how we know that President Obama likes catfish. Hey, there's something that a Mississippi boy has in common with the President of the United States and Michelle Obama. So if you missed that show, you got to go back and listen to that last week. But you listen to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, because you hear things here you won't get anywhere, I'm telling you. And that includes our interview coming up with Mark Skoda. Before that, just let me remind you, got books for sale at my website. Go to the front there, click on my website, and I'd love for you to order the book, Rock Splitting Politics, Walk With Me, other books about the conservative movement, and go there, because that helps keep us on the show. We appreciate you listening to us and telling your friends and neighbors about us. And now, let me get to you, the one and only Mark Skoda. He is a talk show host and a Tea Party leader, and we're glad to have you on the show, Mark.
Doc, appreciate it. I'm glad to be with you today.
Well, Rock Splitting Politics, we like to know what's going on the cutting edge of politics. And there's one thing I know about Mark Skoda, that he is keeping up with not only what goes in politics, but he knows what runs businesses. He knows how to create jobs. He's someone who's been around and has not only been around, he's an activist that's gotten things done. So, Mark, you know you've been involved with the Tea Party since it actually started. And you are a leader. You've been on CNN. You've been on Fox, all kind of national shows. So tell us a little bit right now about the conservative movement after the defeat of Romney in last year's election. We got President Obama for now for more than 3.5 more years. What can conservatives expect to happen? Are we just surrender?
No, of course not. You know, it's interesting. You know, as I looked at the last election cycle, and frankly, I was disappointed. I will, in full disclosure, say I was a Romney fan. He was a good man, a capable individual. Perhaps didn't have the fire in the belly that some people preferred. But having said that, one thing I've learned about the political environment, in particular as it relates to Barack Obama, if someone has an R after their name, they're at least likely to talk to you. If they got a D after their name, they don't want to hear from you at all, particularly if you're an activist or a Tea Party person.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And so when you look at this last election cycle, and this is where I think the Tea Party movement and liberty-minded individuals across the country need to sort of wrap their heads around, and that is that we've only had the 2010 and 2012 election cycles in which this movement has had impact. And frankly, in that very short time, I think people have become impetuous and to some degree perhaps impatient, and they have to recognize that this is the long game.
We do recognize, some of us, like you, me, others recognize it's a long game. We can't give up. One of the things that President Barack Obama came in office day one and he said he's going to focus on jobs, and that's been, to me, a complete failure. And give us a little bit about your background, Mark, because you have created jobs, and I want my listeners to know that, you know, you're not just blowing smoke. You have actually created jobs. So tell us a little bit what your background is.
Sure. Well, you know, I had spent most of my career in corporate life, in fact, working for companies like UPS and FedEx and General Electric. While I was at UPS, I was the head of mergers and acquisitions overseas, and in fact, was responsible for globally expanding the business throughout Europe, Eastern Europe, Middle East, and Africa, open up China, Japan. And during that time, not only did we establish both services agreements, but I also bought a number of companies on behalf of UPS. And then was responsible for integrating that in what was then, back in 1989, the largest single geographic expansion in the company's history. And I have to say, going around, having lived, first of all, for 11 years overseas in about six different countries and worked in about 60, I have a very unique perspective about where America stands today at its own crossroads vis-a-vis what my experience was overseas. And I have to say that while things are tough, we can claw back our liberty, we can claw back our freedoms, and for many of us who believe in capitalism and free markets, we can claw back the opportunity as well.
Well, you say that, and then we forget, and I've been out of country a little bit, not near as much as you have, haven't created jobs out of country, but America does, we're still a free country, and compared to so many other nations, we got a foundation on which we can build, and even though we've seen some freedoms lost, we can reclaim those. And I understand what you're saying, but give us a little, some of your insight. How do we reclaim those freedoms, Mark?
Well, I think, first of all, people have to go back to the sort of playbook, which is our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. You know, it's amazing how eloquent and, frankly, extraordinary our founders were. Take the recent discussion about the NSA, for instance, and domestic spying, as it's been referred. You know, we have established this capture of all of our phone records on the basis of the notion, I think, that we are oriented towards political correctness. Now, back in 1754, our founders understood that in the colonies, that a writ of assistance, as it was called, was establishing the ability for the king to enter your home and search for contraband and collect taxes and or confiscate that contraband. Sounds pretty interesting today, because today we have our government through the NSA and CIA and others confiscating our data, confiscating essentially our phone records, and in many cases it's been suggested, although not yet proven, conversations. But also we have the IRS, which has been essentially used as a blunt instrument against rivals of liberalism. And so the Fourth Amendment and of course the First Amendment, which establishes those initial five freedoms, are critical and are part of the playbook that Americans should rest their certainty on as we begin to attack the liberal agenda and, frankly, the challenges that exist in this country today.
Well, I agree with you, and I appreciate you. You do give us an inspiring effort to see where we can reclaim some freedoms. The problem is just take President Obama when talking about the Obamacare, and there's the part in there that he just unilaterally said, well, no matter what the law says, we won't enforce the employer mandate for a year. We'll just delay that a year. Now, to me, that's taking power away from Congress. And I don't hear anybody in the House of Representatives or anybody in the Senate say, no, that's, you can't do that. We got a, you know, we got divided powers, and you can't take our power away. But he did.
Well, I think it's, you raise a good point. First of all, let's talk about that, because I think many things that this president has done around issues such as arbitrarily granting waivers and arbitrarily granting subsidies and arbitrarily delaying law is problematic. And in fact, it's suspect. I think that there have been people in the House of Representatives and certainly in the Senate who have questioned that, but unfortunately their voices aren't listened to and are not promoted on the mainstream media. We typically see them on, you know, the new media and or perhaps even Fox News. But let's talk about this, because I think it's very important that we have to understand that in the case of the president's decision to arbitrarily delay the law, it's suspect whether he has the constitutional authority of that. I would argue, and I'm not a lawyer, but I would argue that he doesn't. And such, we need to begin supporting those senators and those congressmen who are trying to repeal the law. And there are a number of ideas out there which we can talk about. But fundamentally, I think Americans have to make the phone calls to their representatives to make it known that they are upset about these issues and to encourage their representatives to, frankly, take on these issues in the House and Senate. And I believe, to a large degree, people have become so numbed to the issue of organizing and effective activism that sometimes they believe that nothing's possible. However, I'll just share a very quick story. When I went to the Soviet Union, when there was one, back in 1986, I was trading bubble gum, literally, nail polish, and cigarettes for taxi rides and interpreters and the like. When I left some years later, I was staying in a $250 a night Western hotel. So the possibilities are endless if we put our mind to it.
Well, that when you were talking about some people seem numbed, just numb to doing anything. And then I have to ask you, some people in a cynical way say, well, does it really matter if I phone my congressman? Does it matter, Mark?
It absolutely does. First of all, if you don't, you're making no difference. Secondly, the Congress is required, and most of their offices require, that the number of calls are logged, who made them, when they are made, and what issues are maintained, and they actually respond to that. Now, we have to recognize the limits of government. We have to recognize that we only own, if you will, the House of Representatives, and that the challenges and our desire for change tend to outweigh the realities of the structure of government, particularly when you have a president like Barack Obama, who has stated his objective was to bypass Congress. This man, frankly, in my view, is a clear and present danger to our very liberties. He's not evil, but he is absolutely antithetical to liberty-loving, freedom-loving, and, you know, capitalist-loving Americans.
I'll agree with you on that.
So we have to continue the fight. You see, the left, and let's also remind ourselves, in recent rallies we've held in Washington, where we had over 10,000 people, you know, we are still very active, and we are, in fact, I was reading one article today that a number of candidates, Tea Party-inspired candidates, are running even against incumbents. We are taking over seats at the local level in school boards, city councils, state organizing committees, and we've done that. Think about this, Doc. We have done that since 2009, when this movement evolved, and 2010, when it made its voices heard with those million-plus people, obviously in 2009 and 2010, sitting out there talking about issues relevant to their desire to, you know, pursue and reduce government size and, of course, push back on Obamacare and subsidies. In that very short time, we've been very effective, and we're learning all the time how to do it better.
Well, you say, and we have. I agree with you that we've been effective, and we can see some people who are actually trying to shake up Washington, and of course they get the whole establishment against them. You take senators like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul, and you got the senators like John McCain, who was the Republican nominee in 2008, and I saw the other day where it said it'd be a hard decision for him to decide between Rand Paul or Hillary Clinton if they were, he had to choose between them for president in 2016. I think sometimes people like Senator McCain's been there a little too long.
Well, I think you raise a very important point. So many of these men and women who sit in the House and Senate today, and government generally, Let's look at the federal level. The appointees are essentially, through the term of the president. But elected officials are there, if you will, for an indeterminate amount of time as long as they keep winning elections. And we know that incumbents are overwhelmingly reelected. I think we have to perhaps look at this in the context, as I like to tell people, the president served for 8 years. I think, frankly, that should be good enough for the House, 4 terms, and maybe just 2 terms for a total of 12 years for Senate. After that, go back home and be a citizen again. In other words, while we perhaps don't need to institutionalize term limits, but we need our representatives to say, I'm not going to serve more than this amount of time. If I can't get it done in 8 or 12 years, I'm likely not going to get it done. And I think to that extent, this notion, as we saw even in this discussion of Obamacare and the subsidies for the federal employees, the worry was, I remember reading article after article, we're going to have brain drain. We're going to have the talented people leaving for public sector, private sector from the public sector. I said, good on you, because they should leave. First of all, they're going to find out that the jobs aren't there that they've been telling us all we should get.
Yeah.
And secondly, I want a number of those brain dead people to leave government, because most of them are there on the basis of a civil service agreement where they're there forever and ever and ever. And frankly, we need that kind of change. So I don't look at it in the context of perhaps how the mainstream media viewed it, and certainly believe that it's antithetical to the desire for change.
Well, what you said, if that could happen, we'd have a breath of fresh air in Washington. People wouldn't go in thinking they're going to live and die in Washington, and yet that's what happens. I know in my home state of Mississippi, I can count on one hand the number of senators that we've had in my lifetime, and because there's only been four senators in the last 60 years almost. So, but the thinking is by the establishment, I call it the establishment, and
yes.
It was back when it's the Democrats, same now as the Republican. It's they get somebody in, they establish a rapport of that person, if it's a senator, a congressman, and then it's almost like they look at their campaign donations and their building a friendship. That's like an investment, and they don't want anybody to take that investment away. And if some fresh new person comes up and says, I want to run, bring new fresh ideas into government, well, it's like they don't have a chance, because the whole business community, everybody has already invested in this incumbent. So how does fresh air get broken into that cycle?
Well, it's interesting. As you know, I moved to Mississippi, and as I'm saying to people now, I'm very proud to be part of Mississippi. I moved here from Shelby County, Tennessee, after almost 14 years.
Well, welcome to Mississippi, Mark.
It's good to be here. And I have to tell you that as I've gone around and gotten involved in a number of the Tea Party groups and even the Republican Party, two things are apparent. There is a very clear desire for change, and yet at the same time, I think some of the tools that are out there that could more effectively create that change for people in Mississippi aren't being used as effectively as they might. And I spoke about this recently at a Mississippi statewide Tea Party and Liberty Groups organization, and I made the point that we need to be more sophisticated with respect to those tools. But beyond that, it's all about one-to-one getting out the vote. I give you, the perspective I offer is, in even this next election, we're going to see probably some of the lightest turnout in the history of the state and nationally because of two things. One, there's great apathy right now. People are disgruntled. They're upset. They're broken down in some cases. The second issue, of course, it's not a presidential election cycle. Obama's been reelected, and frankly, people are just sort of essentially looking at the status quo as being just that. So there is some real opportunity, should people so desire, to get the vote out, to get those people who voted against perhaps an incumbent and put somebody up new who can win. And I think that that's the kind of thing we're looking at. Across the country, you're seeing candidates step up. And you have to first contend. People have to support that individual, if not with money, certainly with votes and with getting out the vote strategies and telephone calls and the like. And then finally, get out on the day in which the election takes place and put somebody in there new. But be very clear that this isn't a flash in the pan, that we're not trying to change things overnight, that it's going to be incremental and it's going to take a long time.
Well, I think that was some wise advice, and for if you're Mississippi or if you're New York or if you're in Arkansas, wherever you are, you don't give up and you work, and we can get this nation turned around back and restore these freedoms back to the Constitution, but it's going to take people like you and me and others out there working hard.
We all have to work hard, and we don't get paid for this. And so you have to
don't.
You have to do this as a decision for your own life and your own children. I have a 7 and 8 year old who go to public school here, right here in Center Hill Elementary. A great school, great teachers. Uh-huh. So I'm involved in looking at things like how does Common Core affect their education? Mm. What information is going to be asked of my children, and how does testing work? You know, the fact of the matter is, all parts of my personal life are involved in the state politics, in the national politics. Everything from, obviously, as I like to say, the beginning of life when they were both born, by the way, in Memphis. As I like to say, I'm now a Southerner by birthright.
Okay.
Of my children.
Yeah.
But from Common Core through to things like, you know, health care that's going to require more information, student loans, the IRS, Health and Human Services, the Housing Urban Development, the EPA, the Department of Education, all these organizations, all these federal bureaus and state-level bureaus all impact our lives. And if we think about it in the toto, it tends to be overwhelming.
But when you were naming all those things that do affect our lives, it affects our business, the way we work, the way we have to go seek health care, and it begins to feel like a Leviathan, just a huge monster, and you think, well, what use is to fighting it? There's no way I can fight that big monster.
Well, you have a choice. You can sit on the sideline and wait to be eaten, or you can go ahead with the sword and take a few good whacks.
Okay.
You know, you're in medicine. My wife is in medicine, and she makes less money per hour today than she did 30 years ago. She has 2 years of medical school, 4-year undergraduate degree, a 2-year associate's degree as well on top of that. And she is seeing every single day the impact. We have government, which today is creating a large part-time workforce. I don't know if you saw recently, and a lot of people, I had a good friend who said he had over 120 employees, and he was going to split them up into a whole bunch of LLCs. And the reason was that he wanted to circumvent the Obamacare requirement mandate health insurance when he went under the number of headcount.
Uh-huh.
Well, we discovered, of course, just now that in the regulation,
you can't do that.
They're now going to create what are called full-time equivalents, FTE. So if you have 10 people who are full-time working and you have 20 or 30 part-timers, they'll do the simple, like I say, gozintas, and they'll calculate the full-time equivalent, and you'll be taxed on that basis. So the government's not going to let you get out of life free. They're not going to let you get out of Dodge. They're going to make sure that they impose their will, and you have a simple decision to make. You either accede to that imposition, or through both activism and, to some degree, I will have to tell you, essentially civil disobedience, you make your stand. We need to do the latter.
Well, that's what, Mark, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I hate to end this up. We'll just have to get you back another time.
I'll be glad to.
I tell you, I appreciate you bringing an insight and an encouragement, and there's people listening, and I know we got listeners in California. I know we got them even in Hawaii and on the East Coast in New York. And I just want to say people even now need to think about running for office in 2014 and challenge some of these incumbents, some of these liberals, and they need to be challenged. And so I hope some of our listeners will take that to heart and plan on, like you said, take up the sword and let's get this big government beast cut down to size.
That's exactly right. You know, we don't need the absence of government. We need the reduction of government. And the reality is that there are three institutions that God gave us. He gave us the church. He gave us the family, which is the core nucleus of our society. And he gave us government because, quite frankly, sometimes mankind screws it up. And I hope that, as you rightly point out, people will be encouraged, not discouraged, and continue to fight the good fight on the principles that you believe, and do so with your energy and time available, because all of us can do something more than just sit and watch America's Got Talent or Dancing with Stars.
Can't put it any better, Mark. Mark Skoda, thank you very much.
Thank you, Doc. Appreciate it. Bye.
That was Mark Skoda, and that's some inspiring words he gave us, and gave us something to claw back and get work toward getting our freedom back. So tell your friends and neighbors about Mark Skoda and come listen to this interview. And now, this week's Tombstone of the Week Award leads us right into what I spoke about, Rush spoke about, when our president went on the Jay Leno show, sixth time. And does that diminish the presidency? Well, what happens when you have said nothing about Terry? You told us that Al-Qaeda is on a run. You killed bin Laden. You personally said you killed bin Laden and had Al-Qaeda on the run. And then we shut down 21 embassies. You don't say a word about it until you get on the Jay Leno show, which is a comedy show. And Rush pointed it out. It diminishes the presidency. And that's why President Obama gets this week's Tombstone of the Week Award for diminishing the office of the President of the United States. Lack of judgment. And I think we could say there's dealings with Vladimir Putin of Russia is a lack of judgment. And there's a lack of judgment what he's done in Egypt and the way he's handled the Egypt situation, the Iranian situation. So these are things that are coming to the forefront. And I just have this to say about President Obama, and we'll finish up. He said that they're going. He said that they're going to help dig the ports out in the Gulf Coast, like those in Charleston and Savannah. Well, he needs to look at his map, doesn't he? Now, would they let George Bush get away with that? Would they call him an idiot and all kind of things? But no. This Barack Obama, he was the president of the Harvard Law School Club. So. Anyway, that's what it is, and that's why we're working hard to regain our freedoms. And you're listening to us on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We'll be back next week. Have hope, get inspired, and let's go win back America. See you next week.
Thanks for joining us today, and remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.